Recently, there was a standoff on the Kosovo-Serbia border. This was after Kosovo ordered drivers to surrender their Serbian-issued license plates and replace them with Kosovo plates. Serbs living in northern Kosovo started erecting barricades, and Kosovo residents confronted them. A traffic jam ensued and followed a small shootout. The shooting has now died down, but the threats have continued. A shootout of a license plate may seem excessive, but this is the Balkans, the region where a shootout led to World War I, and where today many ethnicities live in a relatively small area where the political borders don't match their ethnic borders. Welcome to Geopolitical Horizons, a podcast by thegeopolitics.com, and today we want to discuss unrest in the Balkans. And here to make sense of this all is a very good colleague of mine, Petrit Soleimani, who is from the Balkans. He actually grew up in the Balkans, and at the age of 14 in 1999, he moved to the UK. How are you, Petrit? How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you very much. Thanks for asking.
Well, it's good to have you here. I thought you'd be the ideal person to give us a good insight into everything we need to know about the Balkans region.
Thank you for having me.
All right, let's jump straight in, Petrit. Why is the Balkans such a tinderbox? It has a historical reputation of being an ethnic hotspot. So you're from the region. How would you describe the region to us?
Right, so the region, there's a few defining features of the region, and I think the most predominant one is it revolves around the different ethnicities and nationalities, in the fact that there's actually quite a few of them. I believe in total there's about 10 ethnicities, and they've been there for a long time. So some of these ethnicities, nationalities, they've been there for over 1,000 years, some of them even 2,000 years, right? And they tend to hold on to their values. They can have a lot of pride in terms of what they believe in, and the fact that they are in a very, as you mentioned, in a very small area, in a very congested area, and everyone is vying for that limited space, that limited piece of land, right? And so one is...
What sort of ethnicities are there? Can you name a few of them?
Absolutely. So you have the Albanians, who tend to be Kosovo, and the Albanians are the same. You have the Bosnians, you have the Serbs, you have the Croatians, you have the Slovenians. Depends how you define the Balkans, but you can have also the Greeks, you have the Bulgarians, the Romanians, and anything in between of smaller size, small ethnicities who do not have a nation of their own, right? So there tend to be quite a few. And the other feature of this region is the fact that it tends to be a region between the East and the West, right? It's been a region where the different ideologies, different states fought each other. So in this case, it would be the case of the Ottomans and the Europeans. And in fact, it was known as the frontier. It was the Ottoman frontier towards the expansion into Europe. And this is something that Europe took advantage of. So they knew about this. So going back to the actual borders, as we know them at today, the roots go all the way back to 1878, and it's a treaty, it's well-known treaty, called the Treaty of Berlin. This was after the Ottomans lost the war against the Russians, against the Europeans. The Europeans said, actually, this is a good opportunity to take away some of this land. And they did it on the ethnic nationalistic lines. And when the Europeans drew out the borders, some of the ethnicities actually lost out, and they had an impact even to today. So for example, if you look at the makeup of the Albanians in our region, they are currently split into three countries. So you have Albania, Kosovo, and in fact, North Macedonia. The reason behind this is when the foreign minister of Britain, Edward Grey, he decided to draw out the lines of the Albanian border, he excluded Kosovo. So he drew a line between the Albanians and he gave Kosovo to Serbia. And as we know, one of the perceived historical injustices of the Albanians is around this issue as to why have we been split. So it's an issue that the Europeans did about 100 years ago. Where do we stand today? The countries themselves are small in size. So we're ranging from 1 million, 2 million, 3 million in terms of size of population. In terms of the Western Balkans, I say Serbia stands out. It has half of the GDP of the rest of the countries. It has the largest army, largest mass land, and it revolves around the Serbia. And for the conflicts we see today, as you mentioned, around the border, it pretty much revolves around Serbia, Kosovo, and Bosnia. And this is, I think, the crux of the matter that needs to be discussed.
So, Patrick, can you explain the 1990s Balkan Wars? What were its causes? What was its resolution? And how that even has an impact today?
Right. So, The Balkans pretty much between at the end of World War One and the breakup of Yugoslavia was the Yugoslavian period, and there was certainly, especially after World War II, they tended to have some prosperity. And this was on the fact that there was a devolution of powers to these regional powers such as Croatia, Kosovo, Slovenia. But the headquarters was always Serbia. Serbia had the army, had the economy. The president resided in Serbia. The president was Serbian himself, Marshal Tito. And after he died, what happened was that in 1986, which is the roots of the breakup of Yugoslavia, a group of intellectuals, a group of thinkers, politicians, they got together and they said, you know what, Serbia has lost a lot of power. We have lost too much power to these regional countries, and we need to claw some of these back. And this is known as the memorandum in the Serbian history. In and of itself, it was just a think tank. It was an intellectual paper. But what happened was another two things which gave impetus to this. One is that a year later, Milosevic came into power, and he actually adopted this memorandum. He said, I agree with this. Serbia has lost too much power to these regional countries. We need to claw some of this back. And he started becoming more assertive. He went around and said, you know, we're going to claw back some of these countries, some of this. So we're going to remove some of your powers that you have and bring him back to Serbia. And another, the other point which happened that time was actually the breakup, as we know, of communism and all these former Soviet countries taking their independence from the Soviet Union. And there's all these ethnic countries, these regional countries, Slovenia, Croatia, Kosovo, Bosnia. They looked at this and thought, actually, you know what? We could do something about this. Look at all these countries, they're separating. How about we start and ask for ethnic self-rule? We want to be independent. So the first one was in 91, Slovenia. Then it started in 92, Croatia, Bosnia. And that's when the war really kicked off. For Serbia, this was not acceptable. So they sent out the armies. They said, we're going to close up. You cannot claim independence. And that's when the war started. And for the next 5 years, you had an absolute war between different ethnicities. Hatred was at the top level. Around 115,000 dead, around 80,000 of that were Bosnians themselves. Around 2 million people were displaced, which eventually led to a very belated Western intervention in 95, especially for the Bosnian war, right? So, and then the Kosovo sort of came in 99. So eventually it led to the breakup of Yugoslavia, officially ending in 2003. And one country became seven countries led by ethnic and nationalistic countries, basically, and rulers. But the thing with this is that even though the war stopped and there was Western intervention, nationalism has not really been solved, okay? Ethnicities still hate each other, they're still vying for that space. So that gives some context into this issue of the border between Kosovo and Serbia.
So the Dayton Accords, they ended the Bosnia war, if I remember. How does Kosovo come into the equation then?
So Kosovo stands, the way the Kosovo stood out was that they looked at Yugoslavia and they said, we are Albanians, and we're looking at all the other nations, they are Slavic, ethnically Slavic. So they stood out from the beginning. They said, we are unnaturally in this place. So historically, they always wanted autonomy. They always wanted to break up from Serbia. As I mentioned, they really wanted to be a part of Albania. They saw that the British move of 100 years ago was an injustice. They were ruled by an iron fist during the Yugoslav period. It was a time of imprisonment. It was a time of the students were brutally beaten down. Politicians were sent to prison for 30, 40 years. And so as the war was happening in Bosnia and between 92 and 95, Kosovo started coming up with their own movement, which was the KLA, the Kosovo Liberation Army. And they started attacking Serb positions here and there, kill a policeman here and there. So in 96, they went and they went public. They stated their objective, which we want to break from Serbia, just like all the other countries from the Soviet Union and Croatia and Slovenia. We want to break free from Serbia. And in fact, we want to unify with Albania as well. That was like a mini objective behind this, right? So Serbia, again, just like the breakup of Bosnia and Croatia, to Serbia, this was unacceptable. So they sent in the army from between sort of 97 to 99. And around 12,000 people in Kosovo lost their life as a result of this. And eventually, around March 99, NATO intervened. But again, I must point out, it was a belated intervention after thousands had died. So that's the context of Kosovo in all of this.
So why are the Serbs so against Kosovo being independent?
That's a good question. So there's a lot of history behind this. The region of Kosovo was under different kingdoms in the past. At first it was Bulgaria, but then it was the Serbs. So around 13th, 14th century, the Serbs had Kosovo, and it was part of the first Serbian kingdom. They ruled over the region for about 150 years or so. And it was during this time that the Serbs established their church. And most of that actually happened in the Kosovan territory. So in terms of churches, identities, saints, land, institution, most of this actually was developed in the region of Kosovo. So it meant a lot for them. And then what happened was that the Ottomans moved into the area, and they defeated the Serbs. And this happened in 1389 at the Battle of Kosovo. And the day happened was the 28th of June. So the reason why this is important is because what happened to the Serbs, they took this day, 28th of June, and they made it a national day, St. Vitus Day. And it is to commemorate this defeat. For them is to commemorate the heroes for them. And it's a national day, it's a national holiday day for the Serbs since then. So Kosovo, in that context, it's seen as a cradle of their civilization. And they always link it to their sort of national and political identity. For Serbia, Kosovo is pretty much, it's an extension, and it what makes Serbia whole. Without Kosovo, Serbia is just nothing on itself. It is something that we cannot let go. It is part of us, part of identity. And this is written in the constitution, in the media, and this is everywhere for them, really. And the other thing what happened was is that, you know, this region before the Ottomans, it was pretty much everyone was Christians and Orthodox, right, and Catholics. So what happens is that for about 150, 200 years, the Albanians, through their own volition, they became Muslim. And the Serbs, they tend to link this, because the Serbs themselves, because they established church, they kept their religion to themselves, but the Albanians became Muslims. And for the Serbs, this was another hammer, basically, on the nail for them, which is that this region now is majority Muslim, which is the religion of our oppressors, the religion of the ones who defeated our empire. And this, in fact, it holds weight even today. So, for example, the current president of Serbia, Aleksandar Vučić, he was the media spokesperson of Milosevic between the year 98 and 99 during the Kosovo War. There's a video of him when he's speaking in parliament, and he goes, look, if they kill one Serb, we're going to kill 100 Muslims. So there's always this thing. So there's this multifaceted. One is the historical aspects, but the other aspect is the Islamic identity linked to the empire, which eventually defeated them.
Well, because going back to the Bosnia War, the Dayton Accords created an inter-entity boundary line. So Bosnia was set up as a state for the Federation of Bosnia-Herzegovina and Republika Srpska. How is this working, and is it even sustainable in the long run?
What Europe has done is they actually just kick the issue down the road. It is a delicate arrangement, and the reason behind this is because the European thinking is that they do not trust the different ethnicities to rule over the other. So the way they set up the political system is that it's tripartite. What that means is that the leadership of Bosnia is currently between a head of Serb, the Croats, and the Bosnian, and they're meant to coordinate amongst each other. So, but what happened is that, for example, the Serb one, Milorad Dodik, by last year, he said, you know, actually, no, we're going to break away from this. That's why we're going to create our own army, institutions. We don't want to be part of this. So that's where the European mistrust comes of this. But obviously, the Europeans know this. Okay, so they know that they're constantly going to have to intervene. So as part of the Dayton Agreement, they gave themselves something called the Bond Powers. And what this allows them to do is that, in fact, Bosnia at the moment is ruled by an EU representative, and he can implement the Bond Powers. What that means is that if he feels like it, he can veto the parliament. He can veto any legislation. And in fact, he can fire any elected member of parliament or any other politician. He has that power to do that. So there's a question basically around sovereignty. So is Bosnia sovereign, or is it being ruled by the Europe representative base? Is it sustainable? Definitely not. Definitely not. I think there's a precedent for this. I think in September 2020, there was a war which kicked out between Azerbaijan and Armenia and required the intervention of Turkey and Russia, predominantly Turkey. And the reason why I find that thing is the president and there's some relationship is that there was a war between Azerbaijan and Armenia back in the early 90s, just like in Yugoslavia. And in fact, they had a peace treaty in 1994. But the issue was not resolved. It was just kicked down the road, and it was a frozen conflict, which is very similar to what Bosnia at the moment. And I genuinely believe, I think if a war was to kick out, I think Europe must take some responsibility for the fact that they haven't really come up with a permanent solution, find a solution to the Bosnian problem.
So, Patrick, many say that the region wants to hold on to their ethnic identities, and that's why national identities can't work. But are there other models that potentially could work in the region?
So going back to what I said about this region being in the hands of different empires and different countries, one of them is that you cannot escape from the fact that the Balkans is tightly linked to the legacy, and then that is the legacy of the Ottomans. So the Ottomans ruled the region for about, depends where you're looking at, between 450 and around 500 years. And there is a consensus amongst the Western and the Eastern writers, that is that the Balkan region had the most prosperous time and the best peace they could have during the Ottoman period, because they managed, you know, we have to remember Ottomans at that time were superpower, and they were able to bring peace. The different ethnicity nationalities, they ruled by themselves through the known millet system of the Ottomans, and any external threat that these ethnicities faced, the Ottomans dealt with it, and they were able to help them out. And if what you find is an interesting fact, which is these ethnicities, they achieved a lot. So for example, one of the highest positions you could have in the Ottoman Empire was the Grand Vizier, which pretty much is translated as Prime Minister. And 42, around 40 of the Grand Viziers were of Albanian origin, because they were able to achieve these high positions in the Ottoman Empire. They were not oppressed, you know, there's absolutely no evidence of any forced conversion or anything like that. So they had that peace under the Ottomans. It did work. It did work under unified society such as the Ottomans. Obviously, you know, World War One comes along, they get kicked out. After that, you know, there was an interwar period. There's not a lot happened between that. But then after World War II, obviously, the communism came along. And as I said, it was pretty much a case of iron fists. There was a lot of oppression, there was a lot of imprisonment, and people generally lived under fear of the police force. And there was an attempt. It's usually known in that region, it's known as the Brotherhood and Unity. It was an attempt to bring these ethnicities together. It was at most an issue of the clothes you're going to wear and you're going to go and share a drink with your neighbor. It was a very superficial level. It was an attempt to bring harmony between ethnicities, but ultimately it failed.
Okay, so coming more to the modern day, how is membership of the EU progressing for the Balkans?
Right, so from the Europeans' perspective, is that this pretty much the last region standing. They're looking at their victory, the supposed victory over the communism, and they're looking at countries such as, so what happens, you have countries in who are even further to the east, towards the Russia, so Bulgaria, Romania, Poland, and these countries have been able to integrate into Europe. And now the countries have, for example, Slovenia, Croatia, they are in the EU, they are adopting the euro as a currency. So there is a deadlock. There is a deadlock for European Union, and that is on this what I refer to as a triangle, which is between Kosovo, Serbia, and Bosnia. This is not something they have been able to resolve, because all the other countries in Europe, they are either member of EU or they're member of NATO. But these three countries stand out on their own. There have been attempts. Look, I mean, they have tried to bring Serbia and Kosovo to the negotiation table since 2011. But they just hold on, as I mentioned about Serbia having its own ambitions for the region and its own identity. I want to protect that. So they constantly failed. There has been no progress whatsoever. And I think there's a bit of a fatigue. Some of these countries have been potential candidates for the past 15 years or so. They are given certain conditions, they fulfill them, then Europe says, well, I should fulfill this. And some of these conditions, they are not acceptable to the local population. So an example of this is actually Kosovo. So what Europeans have asked them to do is they said you have to implement something called the association, which is that the majority sub areas within Kosovo, you have to give them autonomy. And for Europe, for European Union, what they're thinking is actually this is, we are exporting the Bosnian model to Kosovo. And for Kosovo, this is unacceptable. In fact, even the Kosovan Constitutional Court found this unconstitutional. But European Union is ignoring this. So they're still pushing ahead, saying you need to implement this before there's any talk of European integration. And naturally, look, there's other countries in Europe will have their own national interests. So an example is Spain and its region of Catalonia. So they do not recognize the independence of Kosovo. There's a few other countries, I think Greece, Cyprus, Romania, they do not recognize Kosovo independence. And I do not see any, for the foreseeable future, any integration because the fact that it requires unanimity. It's all the countries in Europe. They have to agree before the country joins. At the moment, I do not see that for the foreseeable future. So it's something that that Europe has have their hands full on this issue.
Okay, so finally, Petri, what would you say going forward are the key strategic trends for this region?
Right, so going back to, so the first one is related to the issue of European integration. What Europe has decided is that we can make use of these regions without having to bother about all the paperwork, all the having to sign different agreements, having to go to the official channels and so on. So in the, they have actually opened their borders in a limited manner, and this is usually come to the talent that these regions have. And I must say that to the detriment of the local countries, you know, I was, during the summer, I was abroad back home, and I felt that there was less people on the road, on the streets. And for example, Kosovo in the last 5 years, it has lost 10% of its population, which is having an impact in the region in terms of providing basic care, basic social services, pretty much. So that's the first one, is the general, the brain drain. And this actually happens across Serbia, across Albania, across Bosnia. It affects the whole region. The second point I'll say is that in, these former Soviet Union countries, they have, for example, Romania, Bulgaria, and Poland, for example. They have chosen where do they stand, and they said on the West. They made the decision, we want to be part of the European Union. They have made the choice. But what's happening, you have Serbia, who's stuck in the middle. Historically, they do not want to let go of the links they have with Russia. Historically, they've always been their friend, helped them out. At the moment, they receive 100% of their gas from Russia. They can't just let go of that relationship and join the Western camp. And this is reflected on the polls which they have. I think that is the level, the amount of people who want to join the EU is quite low in Serbia. The opinion for, of European Union is it's quite low, and people do not want to join the European Union. And they do not forget. So NATO bombed Serbia in 1999, and they generally do not forget this. So Serbia, it is stuck in the middle, and eventually will have to make a decision whether they're going to be in the Eastern camp or the Western camp. I think for Europe and the US, I think the Ukraine war was a blessing for them because they're using this opportunity. But Serbia has held on to this. They do not want to budge. So that remains to be seen where Serbia stands in the near future. The other one I'll say is that it's undoubtedly, the third point, is that Bosnia and Kosovo are majority Muslim countries. They are secular, right? You know, make no mistake about it, they are secular, but they do have some red lines. And this is where Europe is struggling. For an example, I think a year or two or 2 years ago, the European Union decided to ask Kosovo Parliament to say, look, how about you implement the same-sex law in Kosovo? And around 120 MPs, only 28 voted for. And they have similar issues with the Bosnian side of Bosnia. So, you know, Bosnia and Kosovo, in terms of Islamic identities, it tends to be a bit of a spot on the European map. And they've always struggled to integrate this region based on their identity. The fourth point is the influence of the US. The US moved into the region in 1999 after they bombed the NATO. So they set up a base in Kosovo. It's quite a large base for the region. They already have 600 troops resided there. And they did this back then, you know, to counter the Russian influence and so on. But their influence is increasing also at the moment. So, for example, the U.S. counterterrorism operations is based out of Germany. What they've done is they've set up a regional hub in Albania, just across the border from Kosovo, to keep an eye on the region. Maybe the fact is that there is some Chinese influence. So, for example, the airport of Tirana, the capital of Albania, is 100% owned by the Chinese. Believe it or not. So that is that aspect of the US influence increasing in the region. In fact, even last year they signed this, because Albania and Greece, you know, that share borders. So last year, the US signed a treaty with Greece to increase the number of bases in that region. So the US influence in the region is increasing. That remains to be seen, basically, how this handled between in this multi-complex region of different nationalities and ethnicities.
Okay, Petri, thank you for your time today, for that fascinating insight into the Balkans. If you want to learn more about the issues raised today, please check out our website, www.thegeopolitics.com, all one word. You can also learn more on other issues by accessing our website, where you will find comprehensive insights, analysis, articles, and deep dives. I'm Adnan, and thank you for listening.